You know, I just finished recording a No Restraint podcast, and you know, I like to sort of choreograph them or set them up very specifically using a lot of information that I get. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. Sometimes you can just share things you've read or share things that have sort of piqued your interest. But today I was so disturbed when I sat down to do the podcast that I just, I let it rip. And I just spoke about how I was feeling in the face of everything that has gone on. And it's fascinating because, you know, my producer had a really busy weekend, had a lot of like life things to do. So really was not in touch with all of the news. And I'm like jealous because there are times when you need to just detach because it's just awful. There's nothing, you can't find any solace in the direction we're going in this country. You can't figure out what possesses people. I think it's actually what it is. I think they're possessed by evil forces to do some of the most reprehensible things that you can imagine being done, and then to watch politicians play with those things. And I mean that. They play on our emotions with these stories. They use them to further their political agendas. And I get sick to my stomach. But I am in the position where I have to comment on this, so I have to stay engaged, and I'm doing that. I really am. I'm trying to be as close to the fire as possible without getting burned. And boy, I tell you, at times that is truly a challenge. But I'm grateful. You know, not many people have a place where they can go and express how they're feeling about any particular thing. And I'm one of the people who has that incredible gift. Not only do I get to share it with you guys who are eminently important to me, but also I get paid to do it. And it's ridiculous, right? Sometimes you have to just say thank you, Lord, and just keep it moving. But one of the things that really got to me this weekend, and I'm sure that it got to lots of you, particularly those of you who value the Second Amendment the way I do, actually who value the First and Second and Third, and you know, just all of them. Bill of Rights is like really good stuff. And you listen, you know what's coming when you hear a report about a shooting. I mean, you just know what's coming. So when I heard the report of the supermarket and the number of people that have been shot, and then things began to come out about, you know, racist sentiments and, you know, just this horrible stuff, I said, oh my gosh, it won't take them very long until this descends into some nightmarish conversation about gun control. And it didn't take but like 20 minutes. It really didn't. I mean, I watched the mayor of Buffalo, who, by the way, has a husband who's been indicted for drug dealing, right out of the governor's mansion, basically, mayor's house. I guess it's not a governor's mansion. But I watched her get political. She tried to refrain, but she couldn't help herself in a press conference and, you know, had to talk about the hateful and the rhetoric. And then, of course, Kathy Hochul, the governor. Ugh. How did that woman ever get to be the governor? Why can't Winsome Sears, the lieutenant governor in Virginia, get to be a governor? I mean, she's something else. But this Kathy Hochul went down every stupid gun control path that you could go down, much like Gavin Newsom is going down in California because there was a shooting in a church in Laguna also this weekend, yesterday, to be exact. And of course, immediately, they all go right to that, oh, you got to get stop with the guns. We got to get rid of the guns. No more guns. And I'm thinking to myself, these are the two states, with the exception of Illinois, which you can throw in there, that have the most stringent gun control laws in the United States of America. Period. End of story. New York and California. Come on, guys. I mean, Buffalo's not as bad as New York City, but it's still New York State, and it's still got, like, really burdensome, in total violation of the Second Amendment, gun laws. California, forget about it. you know, the burden of proof so that you're allowed to carry a gun, which is your right in California, is almost insurmountable. New York as well. So I look at these shootings when they take place, and the first thing that occurs to me is these shooters seek out places where there's not going to be another shooter. That's all. Where they can get away with it for as long as possible. You know, it's obvious to me that they're deranged. I don't need a whole lecture on how deranged they are. I don't care if they're deranged because of white supremacist ideology that they picked up on the internet, or if they're deranged because, you know, they have some psychiatric illness. It doesn't matter to me. Of course they're deranged. Non-deranged people don't go around shooting strangers. Just, you know, we can agree on that, right? So they're deranged. They have real serious problems. They're not getting help. But we don't want to talk about that. You know, it's Mental Health Awareness Month, and we sit around. I had a guest on. Every talk show host tries to spend a little time paying attention to mental health services. How do we get better access for our friends and family members, for addicts? We got all this conversation that goes on, but essentially, we still have terrible stigmas attached to mental health issues, and we brush them off. And apparently, we brush them off with young people way too easy. I mean, if you have a here we have a second case in a 2-year period of a teenage boy with every single red flag flying high, every alarm ringing loudly, and people just, you know, just like, we kind of knew, but we decided it was okay. You know, tell that to the parents at Parkland. Tell that to the, you know, the family, the members of family members of the people at the top supermarket in Buffalo, that you kind of thought, well, it really, you know, he might be a little disturbed, but it's not that bad. It's that bad. And then they get weapons, and it's the weapons' fault. It's our fault for allowing them to get weapons. It's our fault for thinking that people should be allowed to have weapons. You know, that's all you're going to hear for the next 2 weeks until the election. That's all you're going to hear. And it makes my head spin. Instead of, and I use this every single time, and I can't help it because it is the truth. I wish that there had been someone besides that one lonely security guard inside of that top supermarket who was a concealed weapons, a licensed gun owner who knew what he was doing or she was doing. Because how many could have been saved? How many injuries? How many lives could have been saved? Because the bottom line is, I'm a gun owner who understands that it's a responsibility, right? And I don't go places where they tell me, unless, you know, it's a federal courthouse or something, which I cannot avoid. I don't go places where they tell me I can't carry my gun. It's concealed. Nobody has to know you're carrying it. You know, I support open carry, but we don't have that yet. So I go into places secure, that if, God forbid, something happens, something goes off like went off in the top supermarket, I'm not helpless. And I'm not going to stand by and watch innocent people get mowed down. Mm-mm. I'm going to neutralize the shooter. That's what I'm going to do. Permanently neutralize the shooter. That's what I'm going to do. Instead, this guy's going to go to trial. It's going to be another, Parkland shooter thing with, hand-wringing. And do we give him the death penalty? Can't even get a death penalty in the state of California. There is none, you know. So what do? Do we treat him like an adult? Upstate New York? I don't know. I think there is a death penalty. I'm not sure. But we'll have all this hand-wringing about that in these two cases, right? That's what we're going to hear. And how we have to take all the guns away. And it just makes me livid. I'm not a hero. I'm not a sheriff. I'm not, you know, a superwoman. But I know full well when I walk into whatever neighborhood supermarket I happen to go in And the idea that, you know, this guy specifically targeted a supermarket in an area that was predominantly Black, African-American, and he drove 3 miles to get to this place, okay? Like, there's no African-American supermarkets nearer to his home. I find that hard to believe. But he went specifically there. Why? Well, Tops has a policy, you know, about guns. Wouldn't you know it, right? Churches in California have to abide by very strict gun control laws. And half of their ridiculous, you know, administrations and cities are very strict about that. Meanwhile, innocent people get mowed down by criminals, by deranged criminals. I walk into every place with my eyes wide open. My first course is always, where are the exits? You know, what's going on? I size up, you know, are there any, does I feel like there's anything going on inside of this supermarket? Do I hear shouting, anything like that? Once I'm sure that it's just a regular day at Winn-Dixie, Publix, Walmart, wherever you're going, I proceed in and I have to be, you know, clear. I know where my weapon is and I know how quickly I can access it if I need to. Trust me, if I'm walking down the produce aisle or over by the bakery counter in Publix and I hear gunshots coming from the dairy department, I am heading in that direction carefully. Carefully. Because my guess is that there's an active shooter situation. And I have been trained in how to handle an active shooter situation. So I'm not charging in, guns blazing, but I am going to approach the area where I hear the shots coming from and see what's going on. And if it's obvious to me what's going on, I mean, look, if they're engaged in a gun battle with a security guy and I watch the security guy go down, I'm taking my shot right away. And that's just the way it is. And for those of you who go, oh, not me. You know, I had somebody yesterday tell me, oh, I hate guns. Yeah, well, you know, I hate them too. But if I'm looking down the barrel of a gun, or I'm looking at someone taking a shot at an innocent person, an old person, a child, anybody, I want my gun. I stop hating them on that moment. I hate the perpetrator. I don't even know if I hate him, but I certainly have no remorse about rendering that person incapable of firing a shot, another shot. That's all. That's the truth. And for people to sit around today wringing their hands about how, oh, you know, we got to make sure that people can't get... No, we have to make sure that the mentally ill, who we know are mentally ill, and who we know are violent and are threatening violence, as in the case of the Buffalo 18-year-old, you know... They can track the January 6th people from the first Trump rally they ever went to, right to the front steps of the Capitol with, you know, all the advanced technology, whether they're looking at their cell phone pings or whatever they're doing, their emails, their social media. They knew where every single one of those people was at all times. They descended on them within 24 hours of January 6th, but they could not track an 18-year-old who threatened to shoot everybody at his high school graduation. Somehow that doesn't make a lot of sense to me. You know, that sounds really, really poor strategy. So that's, of course, the first issue I had this weekend. And then, of course, the idea of people shooting in churches. You know, that always gets to me because I co-pastor a church with my husband in Fort Lauderdale. And let me tell you something right now. Anybody who has the slightest thought about walking into our church, just know this. There are people positioned around the interior of that church who will neutralize you so quickly your head will spin. Anyway, I'm sorry. I get so angry because they'll use this, just like they're using the abortion issue. You know, I'm watching people like saying the most disgusting things. Fetus equals snack. I mean, please, you know, what happened? What happened to people? When did they become so morally bankrupt? Well, it's been a pretty rapid descent, even though it started off somewhat innocently. Let me take a quick break. Don't forget to download our app. It's the 850 WFDL app. All kinds of cool things. You can, you know, get involved in contests. You can get breaking news stories, all kinds of stuff. My phone was going bing, bing, bing all weekend. Not, I put it on noticeable alerts because I want to know what's going on. You can silence the notifications, but you will know what's going on with the 850 app. Let me take a quick break. I'll be right back. Okay, so, you know, here we go. And this is what really gets to me every single time, right? This designation that one crime is a hate crime versus another crime, which is not a hate crime. Like, is if it's not a hate crime, is it like a love crime? I just never understood that differentiation. To me, anytime you commit a crime of violence against a human being, particularly an innocent human being, it's a hate crime. You know, I think about those congregants in California, right? Who literally, you know, and I don't know, are we going to find out that this was a hate crime? It was a Asian man in his 60s, and it was a Taiwanese congregation at the Laguna Woods Church in Southern California, okay? What did these churchgoers do? Because, of course, they are unarmed. He comes in with a gun or more than one gun, and there were about 30 or 40 people. They were having some kind of, you know, brunch after or lunch after their service. They do it every week. And these churchgoers, right, jump up and just subdue this guy. And then the hog tie him. Guns that they recovered. I don't know what, you know, type of gun they were. But I don't know if the guy was a member of the congregation or not. So far, I haven't seen any evidence that he was even from there, from the city. I don't know. All the victims were adults, and one had died. One was deceased. So now, is that a hate crime if an Asian person walks into a church filled with ostensibly Asians and shoots a bunch of them who are old? I mean, everybody he shot were over 66. One person was 92. Okay. Is that a hate crime against the elderly? I don't know. I'm just trying to figure this out. Because Buffalo was obviously a hate crime because apparently he had the N-word on his rifle and he'd been visiting all these, you know, crazy white supremacist websites. Okay, he was filled with hate. But it wouldn't have been any more loving if he just went in there because he felt like it. I mean, to me, this designation is so ridiculous. You know, maybe he hated Christians. I don't know. But does it matter? Do you think it matters to the family members of the men and women that were shot in their congregation having a luncheon? Do you think they sit around going, oh, my gosh, you know, he doesn't like Christians. Oh, he doesn't like Asians. He doesn't like... No. We don't know their motives half the time. We don't know if it's related to hate. We don't know if he was after somebody in particular. We don't know. But even when we do know, as in the case of Buffalo, when we start right off the bat talking about it's a hate crime, it's a hate crime, it's a hate crime, it builds this anger and resentment in people that then all bets are off. You know, they're just full of hate. And I get it. You know, I understand if someone in my family becomes a victim of a violent crime and I'm told, well, you know, they were targeted because they were old, or they were targeted because they were Christians, or they were targeted because they were black, or they whatever. If I'm told something like that, I'm not thinking about like, oh, well, you know, this was a hate crime. I'm thinking about justice. I'm thinking about why was there no one there who could have stopped the shooter if it was a shooting? Maybe it's just me. You know, I listened to Gavin Newsom yesterday tweeting I'm not listening. I'm looking at it because now I'm back on Twitter and, oh, God, I forgot what a mess that is. But anyway. And now we don't know. Is he going to buy it? Does it have bots? Is it, you know, are the algorithms making it crazy? I don't know. It's like, okay, Elon, just buy it. Anyway, you know, Gavin Newsom's big statement on Twitter was nobody should be afraid to go to church. Really? Hold on. Whoa. You told people, you, Gavin Newsom, that people should be afraid to go to church because of a virus. Okay? That they could get a virus if they went to church and if they sang in church or if they stood near people in church, if they didn't wear a mask in church, if there were more than 10 people in the church. You told people that church was not a safe place for 2 years, at least a year. And now you're worried that people will be afraid to go to church. Let me tell you something. As a person who is intimately involved in church life and reads lots of publications about church lives all over this country, that pandemic hurt the church more than the mass shootings have ever hurt the churches. Churches did not shut down over mass shootings. They got armed bodyguards. That's what churches did. But they had no choice when it came to the pandemic. They were shut down. They were in violation of all kinds of laws if they didn't shut down. They were jailed. Pastors were, you know, put in jail. And now you're saying nobody should be afraid to go to church. Is it just me? Or is the blatant hypocrisy of the people in control of our lives painful to you as well? Because I just, you know. To me, the idea that there was a shooting at any church causes me terrible pain. Anywhere, supermarket or a church. But when we have to identify them and say, well, it's more painful because it was a Taiwanese congregation, or it was more painful because it was a black supermarket, this is what we keep doing over and over again, so that we all don't trust each other. We all dislike one another. Some of us hate each other. And we just play into this divisive garbage. And I don't know about the rest of you, but I am so tired of it. I think a lot of people are tired of it. And that's why you're seeing some strange pre-election stuff coming into these, you know, we're in primary season already, but you're starting to see things that are very, very unpredicted. And there's going to be more of it. Oh, you can bet that. People are ticked off. People are paying attention. People don't want their kids being told that they're, the opposite gender. People don't want their kids being told that they can self-identify with any kind of pronoun. People don't want that. People don't want to be told that if a Supreme Court makes a decision that not everybody agrees with, that their lives should be in danger, that their families should be in danger. No, people do not like this. People do not like it at all. And that's why everything that they're doing to try and evade the disaster that's coming in November, everything the left, the Democrats are doing, is making it even worse. I can tell you that right now. Because it will either demoralize voters to the extent that they stay home, fine with me, on the left, or it will turn them into Republicans. That's what it's going to do. Anyway, let me take a time out. Don't forget that you can listen to my No Restraint podcast that's coming, will be, I don't know how you describe it, downloaded, uploaded, whatever, today. If you have the app, the 850 app, you can listen to it at your earliest convenience. You can do it while you're taking your walk tonight. You can put it on while you're on your the treadmill or Peloton. Instead of listening to that, you can listen to the podcast, right? It'll get your blood pumping anyway. Let me take a quick break. I'll be right back. I'll tell you what, you can't make this stuff up. You just can't. I know some people get frustrated because I say that so much, but it's so true. So there were a whole bunch of these posts on Instagram, which is another one of these social media things that just make my stomach turn. And this was about, you know, there are some alumni organizations that I follow. And, you know, not necessarily because I went there, but because maybe my kids went there. And one of the most fascinating bits of information that I ever pick up is from the students at Yale Law School, where my son went to law school. And this is the most woke Ivy League institution in the entire country. And the really sad part about it is that it's going to produce not just a lot of lawyers, but a lot of judges and a lot of professors and a lot of politicians, right? And this group, by and large, the law students, especially the left ones, which is 99 out of 100, they have gone absolutely stark raving mad over the idea that Roe v. Wade may actually be overturned. And this is what they're calling for. This is their words, not mine. Unrelenting daily confrontation with their conservative classmates, like all two of them, right? I mean, in the days when my son went to Yale Law School, it was him and Abigail Schreier that had ever in their lives uttered the word Republican or voted for a Republican, okay? Everybody else that they went to school with, including their roommates and their friends, and they were all leftists, okay? And that affected both of them, although I'm so proud of Abigail for how she stuck to her guns and literally is the one who started the conversation about this whole transgendered crap going on with our kids. But she endured Yale Law School. She was also a religious Jewish person, not popular at Yale. No. Students for, Justice for Palestinians or whatever the name of the organizations are, the social justice warriors at Yale Law School were brutal, as they always are. I just read an article. I was thinking about doing a podcast on this, about this this girl at Tufts who is under siege. She's a Jewish student and, like, you know, she's being targeted. Oh, it's just, it's vile. Anyway, so I'm looking at these. They want daily confrontations with their conservative classmates. And in a series of Instagram posts, they said they were raging against, quote, democratic institutions, raging against the United States Constitution, and raging against their fellow students whose ideology they disagree with. In one post, members of the school's conservative Federalist Society are the topic. The members of Yale Law School's Federalist Society are conspirators in the Christo-fascist political takeover we all seem to be posting frantically about on Instagram.com, said Shyamala Ramakrishna, a first-year law student. So why are they still coming to our parties, laughing in the library, roaming these weirdly high school-esque halls with precious few social consequences and without unrelenting daily confrontation, when they'd, in theory, allow their classmates to endure forced pregnancy and in practice are studying for finals to secure exactly that future? What? These people are certifiable. They're as crazy and will ultimately have a lot of power as some of these lunatics that are roaming around with violence in their hearts. In another one of the posts, first-year law student Leah Fessler reportedly wrote, "If you're not ready to hold accountable the people and groups who at this very school produce the men who just took away women's bodily autonomy, miss me with the commentary. Democrat institutions won't save us." they're sick. They really are. They're sick and getting sicker. And this person was a one-time New York Times freelancer. So how is she going to apply her views as a legal intern when she's the intern for a federal judge? Of course, the judge was asked by the Free Beacon, you know, do you know about this? There was another first-year law student, this Melissa Olgan, who ranted that neither the Constitution nor the courts nor the effing illusion of democracy are going to save us. She also, of course, conjured up a familiar demon in the IG post. How can we possibly expect a document drafted by wealthy, white, landowning men to protect those who face marginalization that is the direct result of the very actions of the founders? This is unbelievable to me. This is a pipeline, Yale is. I know because my son went to Yale School. To the most elite legal institutions out there. This is the incubator of intolerance. Really. When there were speakers at a bipartisan civil liberties forum, they got menaced by the activist students. That's right. Woke Yale Law School brats. Of which apparently, you know, my son has known many. You can't, you just try as hard as you can to understand this. How did we get to this point? Where they actually are proud of this kind of behavior, where they're being applauded by the Speaker of the House and by the President and his, his staff, his cabinet. It's okay with them if you harass Supreme Court justices over a decision that hasn't even been rendered yet. It's a draft opinion that got leaked by one of these lunatics, and Clarence Thomas made a brilliant comment over the weekend. He said, this is it. The Supreme Court has no credibility anymore. And he's right. How can you trust a court that can't control the privacy of the justices? Not just the privacy of their opinions that they debate, but the privacy of their lives, their homes. Justice Alito can't go home. His family and he are outside of their home in protection by the FBI. How is that okay? And yet, you know, ask the administration. They think it's okay. You know, just like it was okay when Maxine Waters said you had to get in the face of anybody who works in the Trump administration. In public, you have to make them unwelcome wherever they go. How is that okay? And then you want to know why a young 18-year-old can get so angry that you couple his anger with his mental illness and he could arbitrarily shoot innocent people. It's beyond my comprehension. And you can't excuse anybody. This is a direct result of our letting bad behavior slide, making excuses for bad behavior on both sides. But it's really prevalent right now on the left. First and foremost, leaking a draft of a Supreme Court opinion, that's big stuff, you know? Trying to get people agitated and riled up and violent like they did right after George Floyd's death. Nothing but violence and looting and mayhem by angry mobs. They like this. The left likes this. And the media, they're disgusting. They pump it up. They nonstop cover it. They make you think that if you're not in agreement with these mad men and women, something wrong with you. You must be a racist, right? If you didn't put on your pink pussy hat cat, whatever that was that they wore to the inauguration of President Trump or to D.C. that weekend, if you didn't put that on, then you're a misogynist. if you didn't, stand for open borders, then you're a bigot, a racist. If you didn't give money to BLM, then you're a racist. Meanwhile, now we find out BLM took your money and bought houses. The one thing they didn't do was help poor people or help the families of, the afflicted. And we know it. We know this stuff. It's like watching Dinesh D'Souza. If you go on my daily download, the video today is Dinesh defending against Ben Shapiro, of all people, who I think is one of the great minds of our time, young minds. But he's wrong on this. Ben said, how come we didn't see the same guy going to multiple drops? And Dinesh explains it. But here's the issue for me. We're always trying to establish proof without any doubt, proof positive of any allegation that we make, right? You have to be sure, and we don't want to accuse anybody of it. The left, even if they know it's a lie, they perpetrate it. Even though they know the guns didn't shoot anybody, they just keep on that down that narrow, narrow highway. Even though they know that abortion is the killing of a baby, they keep saying it's not. And even though they know that, no, the majority of people do not believe that you should be able to have an abortion in the eighth or ninth month strictly because you want to. No dangers or anything, just no, decided against this. The majority of people do not approve of that. And now we find out that they actually wanted to codify a law, not Roe v. Wade, worse, that you could decide at any point, including afterbirth. These people are sick and getting sicker. And we're wondering, we're trying to figure out, why? What precipitates this? We precipitate this. Each one of us. Because we don't stand up for what's right, and we don't condemn what's wrong. We're trying to excuse everybody's bad behavior. I'm not doing that anymore. You break the law, you go to jail. I don't care what kind of childhood you had, none of that. Anyway, let me take my final break. Don't forget, coming up at 1 o'clock, Dan Bongino. At 4 o'clock, Ben Shapiro. And then tomorrow morning at 5:30, right about 5:30, Jen and Bill will be back. You stay right where you are, because I'll be back for one more segment. Boy, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. That's all I can say is boy, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. Goodness gracious. And the weirdest part about everything that I watched and listened to on the computer or even on the TV set, I didn't really have much time to look at the television. I think I watched a little of Levin last night, and that was really it for the weekend, other than we did watch a movie. That other than that, just didn't participate. I have enough on the computer. And people are challenging, even language now. And I get it. I know why they're doing it, but they're worried. Maybe if we say it this way, or maybe if the news was reported in a particular way. And all I can think to myself is if this draft opinion ends up being the decision by the Supreme Court, they will have overturned Roe v. Wade. That's all. It doesn't matter that it's just adhering to a federalist ruling. I get that. But I'm not changing the language anymore. We've done too much of that. And that's why we're in the mess that we're in. Because we keep telling people, let's sweeten it. Let's not be so dogmatic. Oh, the problem with Trump was all those mean tweets. And, he says terrible things. And, oh, my God, we can't talk like that. We must talk like that when it's important. Obviously, I don't believe in throwing around expletives. I don't believe in changing the language to accommodate people for no good reason. But we've done that. The right, the conservatives, the Republican Party, they have gone along with all of this, let's just be a kinder, gentler politics. Meanwhile, they're out there in front of Supreme Court justices' homes. right? But we're like worried, oh my God, I went to Washington on January 6th. They must have my information. I'm sure they were tracking me. I'm afraid to go on the internet. I have friends who no longer participate in any political action because they're afraid that because they went to Washington on January 6th, that they're, you know, being scrutinized by the FBI. And I keep telling them, you can't live like that. It's un-American. And then they say, yeah, well, how would you like to be, you know, incarcerated for like 2 years with no trial? Because that's what's happening to people. By the way, I'm going to have a candidate who's one of the January 6th protesters who's currently incarcerated, and he just submitted enough petition so that he could run for Congress. I love it. I just love it. You know, these are the kinds of stories that you're going to be hearing more and more of. It's crazy, right? I mean, think about that. There is actually a candidate right now who is a January 6th defendant who is currently incarcerated, who will be running for the Florida House of Representatives. Right here in our backyard. Mm-hmm. Got enough petitions signed so that he can run. You're going to be hearing a lot more. Yeah, a lot more about these kinds of cases, because you got to push back. You have got to push back. We cannot continue to allow them to dominate the language, the conversation, the direction of this country anymore. I've had enough. As they said in Network, I'm not going to take it anymore. That's all. Stand with me or stand to the side and get out of my way. Anyway, I thank you for your time this time. Until next time, my plan is to be back here tomorrow at noon. That is, if it be his will and he delays his coming. Remember, what lies behind us and what lies ahead of us, well, those are tiny matters compared to what lies within us. So wherever you are, you know, just be yourself, because everybody else is taken. And stand for something, because if you won't stand for something, then you'll fall for anything. Don't kneel except to the cross. Just kneel in church. May God bless you, and may God bless the United States of America. I'll see y'all mañana.